Hello, everyone. Aubrey here. India is out on a much-needed vacation, and she will be back for the next episode. Today, I wanted to bring in someone for the introduction who is a bit more familiar with today's topic, and I've actually wanted to record a little bit with her for a long time now. So why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Okay. Hello, my name is Corinne Calvin. One of my favorite hobbies is reading. Especially I love reading queer fiction, even though I read a very wide variety of basically anything.
Queer fiction. Mm-hmm. So like middle grade, YA, falling in love stories, coming out stories, centering around that whole teen life, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Now you mentioned your last name was Calvin. Mm-hmm. Who are you related to, Corinne Calvin?
Aubrey Calvin here.
Oh, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. We have my daughter, Corinne, here in the studio. So just to recap, we've interviewed my wife. Now it's time to talk to the daughter. Daughter, what do you love about queer fiction?
I love that it challenges heteronormative stereotypes and expectations. And it makes you really stop and question things about yourself. And it's overall just an amazing genre. And I think heteronormative now is more important than ever, and it's lighthearted and it's fun.
Are there a lot of stories that take place in the South?
No, not really.
Yes! That's one thing that Corinne and I have talked about a long time, is that we love reading this genre, but we feel like there aren't many books about the LGBTQ+ experience in the South until Corinne went to our local library. And Corinne found a book by an author named J. Robin Brown. And J. is in the South and writes books that are about Southern characters. So you turned me on to a great artist, author, that we are going to talk to today.
Hey!
All right. Do you have anything else you want to say to the wonderful listeners of Southern Queries?
Not really, I think.
All right. Well, thank you, Corinne, for coming on and talking to me.
Always.
While our India is on vacation. Maybe we'll have you on for another episode or two. Maybe we'll talk to you longer.
I'd love to.
Okay. And you're going to hear her voice again later on, because she does ask a very interesting question to J. Robin Brown. But I don't want to give it away. So you're just going to have to listen in. And she kind of pops back in for a bit. But let's get to that interview. I'm excited to have you all hear it. So I'm here today talking with J. Robin Brown, who is an author, and she has a new book out, 5 Months or Forever. And yep. This is an adult contemporary novel.
This is an adult contemporary romance. It's my first adult book and actually my first foray into independent publishing.
So you're not with Harper on this one?
No, I just decided to do something totally. I wanted all the control. So.
Oh. That is amazing. I love this. I love the idea of that.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about 5 minutes until forever. 5 minutes or forever.
5 months. But before or forever. That,
five. See, this is when you know I haven't done an interview in about a month. I haven't interviewed anybody.
Well, you know, it is about lesbians, so it could be 5 minutes or forever.
No, what? No. 5 months or forever. But you're mostly well known as a YA author.
Yes.
A YA queer lesbian author, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And some of your books are Georgia Peaches and Other Forbidden Fruit, The Meaning of Birds, The yeah. Key to You and Me, which is mm-hmm. The Key to You and Me is how I found you.
Okay.
That was my first entry into your books. And then I've read like two or three other ones. And then your very first book was No Place to Fall.
Yes.
I listened to a great interview you did on YouTube about the kind of origins of that title, No Place to Fall. How did you get into writing? Like, what made you decide to go down this path?
So I always loved to write. It was always something that came, well, first off, I was a reader. Like, I read voraciously as a young person. My mother was fantastic about taking me to the library every Saturday. And, you know, the Scholastic Book Fair was like,
I love the book fair. Yes.
Ever.
Oh,
and
my favorite part of middle school. Oh, so
yeah.
The saddest part about high school is they don't have it.
I know, right? Why is that?
I don't know. I think they would make a killing. I love that in elementary and middle school, and then high school, I guess it's not there.
Yeah, no, it's not. You're right. But my dad was also a big reader. He always had books around, and so I would sometimes pick up things he was reading. But I started writing. I wrote like poetry and sort of angsty journal entries and just like stream of consciousness stuff. And then I wrote my first novel-length manuscript after I started teaching. And I was around, at the time I was teaching at a Montessori school, and fourth, fifth, and sixth graders. So I was reading a lot of middle grade, and I love Kate DeCamilla and her book, Because of Winn-Dixie. I just remember reading that book and thinking, oh, I want to make readers feel that this way. Because it was just
a very emotional book.
Yeah, it sure is.
I read it with my daughter.
Yeah. That's just sort of that classic middle grade kind of feeling. And so my first book was about a dog, and it didn't go anywhere, and I made a lot of mistakes. And then I decided I wanted to get serious about writing, and so I took some classes through the Great Smokies writing program at UNC Asheville. They just have super classes, and I took with a woman named Joy Neves, who used to work for Front Street Press, and there were actually, I don't know if you've ever heard of the author Megan Shepherd, who wrote Madman's Daughter. And anyway, she was in my class too. It was like when she was first getting started, and there were a couple of other people that have since gone on to get published in this initial group. And so it was just, I started learning. I learned about querying. I joined the SCBWI and would go to their conferences and just kind of like started reading a lot and learning and figuring out what it took, and learned how to write a query letter. And at the same time, I'm writing and like trying to do middle grade. And then I wrote a young adult novel. And it did have, I think the protagonist was bisexual. And I actually got an agent with that manuscript. But the agent actually was more interested in my work in progress, which was another upper middle grade. Anyway, one thing led to another. That agent and I parted ways. I didn't sell either of those books. And I wrote No Place to Fall. And I started, I did like one of those online like first page workshop kind of things where agents pop in and do requests. And it was, I could tell it was different. Like the amount of requests and interest was not like I had seen with anything previously. And by that time I had left the Montessori school and started teaching at a high school. And this first book is set sort of loosely in the community where I was teaching, and in kind of deep Appalachia. And, you know, I grew up not a big city girl, but a middle-sized city. And, you know, you grow up and you hear stories about the mountains and the woods. And, you know, so I went in with my own bias, right? And then I got in there and I realized these are just teens just like anywhere else. They just don't have the same access. The lessons they learn from their parents are different than maybe lessons other kids learn from their parents. But they're still just teenagers,
right?
And dreams, and yeah. And so that first book was sort of a love song to that region and to those students that I was working with. And it was actually, it featured a heterosexual romance. I wasn't out at my job. I didn't feel safe. I was out in my personal life and in my writing world. Mm-hmm. But at my job, it didn't feel safe. And
I understand that. Yeah, I do. Yeah. I understand that. We get that a lot on the show. So are you from North Carolina? Are you?
No, I grew up in South Alabama.
South Alabama. And then moved to North Carolina later. And I think with both of those places, there's this question of safety, right? Of can you be yourself
there? Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, I've always been a little lucky. Obviously, I'm very cis presenting. People, you know, I mean, I still get asked, well, what's your husband do? You know, and it's like,
I don't have one.
I don't have one. Do you mean my wife?
My wife, maybe.
Yeah. So anyway, so I didn't think I could write a queer protagonist. And then I pitched an idea to my editor at the time for Georgia Peaches, kind of tentatively, like, can I do this? And she was like, go for it.
And I like Georgia Peaches. That was a fun one, this idea of going from the big city for your protagonist, mm-hmm. going from a big city to a smaller town. And mm-hmm. oftentimes we hear stories about people going from small towns to big cities, and this is that opposite.
Mm-hmm.
So I like
that. She also goes from being out to having to kind of, for reasons that
yes.
make sense to her, to kind of like rein it back in for her senior year of high school.
It's that reverse that you get, because of course there are a lot of coming out stories, and right. this is a going back in story where you know who you are and you were expressing it, and now your father, because this one, the dad is an evangelical preacher, right? An evangelical radio mm-hmm. preacher, yes. and he moves to a new market and he's trying to kind of keep his career going. And he asks her to rein in, if you will, and she makes that promise.
Yes.
That's so hard.
It was a horrible ask on his part too, you know? So it was just a bad dad moment.
It was, but I wonder if we've all gotten some of that kind of ask where once you've come out, maybe you have a family member that says, don't be out at the family reunion, or don't tell your grandmother, she's older, she wouldn't understand. I hear a lot of stories about people that come to realize who they are, and then that family member says, maybe not now during this scenario. So it's yes. relatable, but you don't often see it in books.
Right. And I think that it's, I can't think of a lot of other books that have done that. I mean, you certainly have books where people are in the closet from the get-go and are fighting to, you know, find their way out.
Yes, but that's the more common story.
Right, but to willingly tuck it back in. But at the same time, I think on some level, my protagonist in that book, Jo, I mean, she's like just like anybody that's going into a new school, her senior year, new community. I think there was probably a part of her that was like, it gave her an out, like, I'm not comfortable in this new community. And I felt really comfortable being out and queer in Atlanta, but is it going to be the same here? And oh, dang, my dad told me I had to like rein it in. Shucks, it's all his fault. Yet at the same time, my hunch is that she probably felt a little bit of relief.
Yeah, like there's that little bit, because there's already enough pressure to be a teenager. There's already enough pressure mm-hmm. to go in that senior year of high school, the new student.
Mm-hmm.
It's one less piece of pressure. But at the same time, oh God, I would just never want to be a teenager again. It's just, I'm sorry. I would never want to go back to high school. It was exhausting then, and it is so traumatizing just to go back and realize, wow, I would never want to go through that again.
Yeah.
So kind of getting back to the personal, how did you get from South Alabama to North Carolina, where you live now? What was that journey for you?
Well, there was Atlanta in between, which is why Atlanta probably featured in that book. I moved to Atlanta after college and met my first partner, and she was an artist, and she owned a little art gallery, and we kind of got tired of the pace of the city, and we wanted like a cheaper lifestyle. And in the Western North Carolina mountains, there's a big craft movement, and there are a lot of artists around the Asheville area. And we found this community where we bought this little teeny tiny house and just kind of started anew. And I'd always loved Western North Carolina from when I was a girl vacationing. And so I've been here almost ever since. I've had a few little forays elsewhere. But so that's how I've ended up here.
Okay. We did an interview with a bookseller from Firestorm Co-op.
Oh, yeah. Books. That's an awesome bookstore. Yeah.
And they just really opened our eyes to this Asheville community that we just didn't know anything about. And you know, that's why we do this show, is because there are these pockets of community that people don't know about.
Yeah.
And so when you say Asheville, I'm like, oh, I know them. I know that place now. I know more about it.
Yeah. There's a huge queer community in Asheville. And
unexpected to a lot of people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say it's a fairly young community, which is great. But yeah, like that Firestorm bookstore is a queer owned cooperative bookstore. And then Malaprop's bookstore is a lesbian owned bookstore. Trying to think, those are the two that come to mind right off the bat. So
another bookstore to check out. I'm intrigued. I have a sad addiction to bookstores. I love, every time I go on vacation, we look for the local indie bookstores, you know?
Okay, now why is that sad? That is not sad. That's,
well, I don't know if it's sad. It's just, you know, my co-host India, I have to refrain because every interview I would do, it would be like an author or an academic or a bookstore, because I just love talking to people in literature. Dear listeners, this isn't exactly a commercial break because we don't have sponsors, but I did want to take this quick break in the interview to mention that we have left Twitter due to the transphobic comments in Nature made by owner Elon Musk. You can still find us on Facebook, Instagram, and our website. Now, let's get back to the interview with J. Robin Brown. All right, we have a special guest. This is my daughter, Corinne, coming in.
Hello.
Hi, Corinne.
All right. I'm going to give this to you. And she has a question she's been wanting to ask an author about parents, right?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I hope this is something
you've written about in your books as well. So
I was just wondering, why are in so many books, why are parents never together? They always seem to be divorced, or like when a parent has died. I'm wondering why that is.
Well, I think the first reason that pops to mind is, especially with middle grade books, one of the things that happens is often the author sort of wants to get the parents out of the picture so that the middle grade student can like have this independence through this character in the book. And if the parents are there having sort of that realistic kind of parental relationship with a middle grade reader, it might take away from some of that independence and adventure. And so I think sometimes for an author, if there's only one parent that they have to deal with, it's easier to figure out why they're so busy and not around for that person. And you're right. I think in my books, my side characters tend to have intact parents. And my main characters, like one, you know, in Georgia Peaches, there's the dad has had divorces. And the mom actually passed away. And then in The Meaning of Birds, same thing. I have a single mom and a dead dad. So you're right. I've done that. And then in The Key to You and Me, there's a divorce with the one character, but the other character has intact parents, but she's left them for the summer to be with her grandmother. So yeah, I think that that's probably it, is sometimes we just want to figure out a way not to have to write about the parents. So it's easier if one's not around. But I also think that divorce, for I think there are a lot of people that have had parents go through divorce and they have step parents and sort of the struggle of how do you blend a family? And that becomes a real point of conflict in a young person's life, especially if they don't like their step parent or really like their biological parent and feel guilty if they like their step parent. And so that just adds another layer of story that an author can play with. So.
Okay, thank you for answering that question.
I mean, I don't know if that's true for everybody, but that's just my hunch. Does it? Okay.
Well, yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for popping in. Okay.
No problem.
All good?
Yep.
Better answer now?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much.
Now,
no problem.
Thank you so much for answering that. We keep noticing it everywhere. And I didn't notice it till she said something. And, you know, the whole idea about parents not being together. You know, my wife and I are still together. And so she says her life is boring because it's not like the books.
Oh.
So, you know, being married for 15 years is not interesting to a 12-year-old. When all the books you read have divorced parents and parents that have left, and like in your book,
that's a family drama. Yeah.
Like, what is like the key between you and me?
Mm-hmm.
Where the mom has left to Dallas and
yes.
left her and all that. And I like that one. So, okay. So thank you for that. That's been on her mind for about a year.
Oh, good.
But I haven't been able to answer it. Yeah, I noticed that, well, not noticed, but all of your books tend to be based in the South. Mm-hmm. And there really aren't a lot of Southern YA books in general, let alone Southern lesbian books or bisexual books. Why is it important to kind of ground these books in a different part of the country versus New York or the coast? Or why the South?
Because there are a lot of queer people in the South, and I think that we get forgotten about. I think that, I mean, you know, the South is a place that's fraught with a lot of garbage. And, you know, I think it's the South is just a unique place, and it's one that, I don't know about you, but I tend to have sort of a love-hate relationship with it. But it's where I'm from. It's where my family's from. It's the place that made me, for better or worse. And I've lived in other places and have experienced, you know, I mean, I lived in Massachusetts for a couple of years, and other than the winter, there were a lot of things to really like about it. But I don't know. I just know the South. And I know that there are these pockets that are not the pockets that get talked about. And
no, so, they're not.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate, is we really do. I really do feel like we're forgotten in literature. And in TV representation, you don't really see a lot of our stories. And what I love about your YA books is that they feel like love letters to teenage girls written in such a way that you don't chastise them for having normal teenage feelings and emotions. And it's also not
the sweetest thing.
No, because society and culture is so mean to teenage girl interests. Like, you know, if a teenage girl likes a pop band or has an interest in like art, or, you know, heaven forbid, a teen book, we tend to view it as vapid or shallow or not worth the cultural discourse, or we talk about it in such a way that's so demoralizing. And I love that your books really do celebrate just this idea of being a teenage girl and trying to figure it out. So I love that about your writing.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, for myself, as a teen, I didn't know that I was queer yet. I mean, I knew that I didn't fit, and I knew that there was something about me that just didn't line up as neatly as my appearance might, you know, lead people to believe. And so, like you were saying earlier about, you know, high school, my teen years were hard. And I do. And then when I started teaching high schools, you know, you hear people say, oh, I can never work with teenagers. Oh my God, they're awesome. And, you know, they just give me such hope for the world.
Oh, and they're such an accepting generation. They're so curious. Oh,
yeah.
I love them. I love them.
And so, yeah, I thank you for that. That means a lot for you to have said that.
I did want to shift gears a little bit and talk about your new book, which is an adult romance. This is not a YA book. It's more adult oriented. Mm-hmm. Why try the new genre or the more adult genre?
It was just time for me to try something else. I had written, well, a couple of things. You know, I think with the four novels that I wrote for YA, I was exploring different things, like No Place to Fall is sort of, you know, a love song to the area where I was living. And it's about a girl, you know, chasing, who's unaware of things like magnet art schools and a life beyond her family, because her, you know, her parents didn't go to college. Her sister lives in the backyard with her, you know, no good husband. And she's all of a sudden discovering there's more to life than her little holler, and wants to explore that. And it was sort of what, you know, a love song to those students I was working with at the time. And then the next book, The Meaning of Birds, was I was dealing with grief in my own life, and it was really like I needed to write, and it was sort of healing for me to write about grief. It's not my story, but I certainly drew on my own experience.
And the author's note for that one is very touching. And the author's note there is very touching. And I don't know if you all notice, I'm trying to talk about these books without giving spoilers away. So I'm trying to have a discussion about them without telling people what's in them, because I do want everybody to read them themselves. But keep going.
Well, I mean, I can give a little. I mean, the meaning of
birds. I'm trying not to, because I want people to experience them.
Well, okay. But I mean, I can give a little synopsis.
Oh, sure. Meaning of birds.
It's a story about a young woman who has lost her girlfriend very unexpectedly. That's in the first chapter. Mm-hmm. No spoiler. And it's told in now and then chapters. And so the now chapters, we have her story through. Not through, but, you know, learning how to live with grief. And the then chapters are the love story. And that book is very close. I had lost my spouse about a year before I started writing it. And
I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you. And yeah, so it's definitely my saddest book. It still makes me cry a couple of scenes when I read them. And then the Georgia Peaches, I wanted to deal with having grown up in the South. One of the first questions people ask you is, well, where do you go to church? And I
that one a lot, yes.
Wanted to kind of, and I had also been dealing with a student who had been kicked out of their home when they came out. Proud to say that student has now graduated from college with a social work degree, despite that happening at the end of their senior year. But so I wanted to kind of explore queerness and religion. Are they possible to coexist? And, you know, I would say it's a very hopeful book that is probably better suited to people who live in larger cities where there are more affirming churches. But I have heard from readers all over the world with that book that are trying to figure out how to hang on to some bastion of their faith while reconciling with the fact that they're queer and that, you know, they were made that way. And so that was that book. And then The Key to You and Me, I'd always wanted to incorporate a horse girl into a book yes. because that's my passion. And so that was that one. So now we're up to the adult book. I just didn't have anything else burning that was in the idea bank for a YA. I had spent COVID listening to podcasts in the mornings and while doing various chores, and listened to a lot of stuff about independent publishing, and have a couple of friends that had gone the hybrid route with their own writing. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to try that. And I think that lesbian romance, although there are many that have come out this year traditionally, at the time I kind of decided to pursue this, I didn't think it was like possible. And besides, I just really wanted to try it because I kind of liked the idea of like being in total charge. And so this book is set on the coast of South Carolina. And it is a story of two women in their 40s that are kind of starting over, and which is definitely comes from my life because I had to start over. I chose to start over. And what that looks like, and it's very low angst because they're old enough to know how to communicate with one another.
And, it's a sweeter story. It's sweet. Yeah.
A sweet beach read if you know for people that just want something light that's going to make them feel warm at the end of it.
And the setting is perfect. I've been to Folly Beach. We did our last vacation in Charleston. We wanted to move to Folly Beach and to that area. We didn't want to leave, so
yeah
it's a perfect setting for a romance. It really is. But you said you were going independent. You said you like to try new things. What's the process like taking it all and having all the control, and how's it different?
So the good things are that I can, there's no pressure. Like if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I've decided to be a little bit low stress about it. I tried to do it like I would have. I mean, I liked that I came out of a traditional publishing background because I hired a developmental editor who had worked for Harlequin in the past. And then I hired a copy editor, and I mean, got a beautiful style sheet, just like I would have with, you know, in traditional publishing. I hired a professional cover designer, so that it could hold up next to my other covers. And so that process is similar. I mean, different in that I think if you're with a traditional publishing house, that editor is also really invested in it succeeding because it's their name on the line too. Whereas when you're paying an editor for hire, maybe there's not as much pressure on their part to like really hone it, but I feel like I hired good people and I was really pleased with you know how it turned out. The scary parts of it were like, okay, ego, you know, you've been published by a traditional house and that feels really great and like, ooh, look at me, and now suddenly, you know, it's like, oh, I don't have any big name behind me, it's just me. But I got over that and just decided that was silly. And then all the marketing is on you. And that's probably the biggest thing, is how do people find your book? And I mean, I'm fortunate in that I do have these other books. And as my readers age up, and I have a lot of adult readers too, so, and a newsletter. So I've been able to approach people that way. But finding the readers that never read YA and don't know me, that's an ongoing, I'm still learning. So
that's the harder part. You're breaking into a well, I mean, with your biography, you're someone that likes to keep learning things. You've been a jeweler, meditator, a mediator. See, I cannot talk today. You've been a jeweler, mediator, high school art teacher, a author through the traditional, and now you're an indie publisher. So this feels less like ego and more in line with you. Are you just someone that just likes to try new things, or?
Yeah, I'm a Gemini.
You can't be kept to one thing. You just like to do all the different things. I like that.
Yeah, no, I do. I like to keep learning. I mean, I kind of circle back in the same areas. Like, it's always creative and, but yes, I do like to, and I'm working on a middle grade book now that I've been working on for several years and I keep coming back to. So who knows where I'll go next?
Who knows, right? And then maybe one day, like a kid's picture book might be something. I don't know if you're an illustrator. I don't know if you can draw. But...
No, I actually am not very good with flat mediums. No, sadly.
Well, so there's one thing that we found that you can't do. But no, so far, that's the only thing.
I used to always say to my student, my goal is for you to be better than me. You know, I liked the three-dimensional art. I liked doing clay and like jewelry making and sculpture, things that, you know, had dimension to it. But like drawing, painting, you know, for most of my students, my skills were enough to be able to move them along. But I had a few students that were very talented. And so that's where my Montessori came into play, because it was like, okay, my job is just to set up what you need.
And then you take it from there.
Yes. Yes.
I never could draw. I still can't draw. I stopped at the stick figures. I make a pretty good Christmas tree, but I can't draw. And that's why I choose words. getting a little personal. Okay. How did you meet your wife? And you all have a life full of animals. So what's your love story?
Okay. So, well, it's kind of like a sad love story. So we both lost our spouses to cancer. And we actually met online in a grief group. And we were close to the same age, had kind of similar stories. Both of our partners were quite a bit older than us. And we just started talking. Okay, I'm getting really personal. So I was like, I was really lonely. And I was like, okay, the whole world has changed since I met my first partner. Like, online dating was not a thing that I did. And how do you even do this? And like, you know, I tiptoed into it and it was like, oh, I can't. And you know, I posted something about it, and then they, you know, they posted back and said, oh, well, my grief counselor said that if you like, you've been happily partnered and you're young, that you will do well if you partner again. And so I messaged her and just said, have you started? How do you even do this? Like, not thinking anything, because she was in Massachusetts and I was in North Carolina. Well, as we all know, that means nothing.
Right? That means nothing in this day and age. That isn't
nothing.
You're on the same coast, so you're fine. I mean, yes, it's not even East Coast, West Coast thing. You're right in, you're close to, you're not as far apart as you think.
Yeah. So anyway, just it kind of like we started talking and just, I mean, it's been really cool because we can really relate to each other. And I joke that we're in a spiritually polyamorous relationship, because there are four of us here, only two of us in corporeal form, but there's definitely four people in this relationship. And it's a good thing, you know, it's nice to have room for our former loves. And anyway, so she was living in Boston and I moved up there, and but I had a farm with my previous partner, and we're getting like long-winded here. Anyway, I had gotten my animals down to two. They had either decided to leave the world with my previous partner, in a weird kind of mass exodus that, you know, of natural causes. And, I had a dog and I had one horse. And then she decided she was done with snow and she wanted to leave the job that she was in and pursue a master's degree. And somehow we ended up back here in North Carolina, not in the same place I lived before, And then the animal collection just grew. We added another dog. We added a couple of cats. And now I have 3 horses. So
3 horses, a couple of dogs, a couple of cats.
Yep.
Wow.
All the medicine is a goat and chickens.
That's a lot of animal food to buy.
Yeah, no, I'm done. I'm done.
Everyone always says they're done.
I know.
There's probably going to be another one in there somewhere.
No, done.
Last question, and then I'm going to let you go. We do have some younger listeners, especially in the South, that are still trying to find themselves. What advice would you give to any Southern LGBTQ teenager or maybe young adult who's still trying to figure things out outside of reading your books? What advice would you give them, do you think?
One, that they are perfectly beautiful humans and not to let anybody suggest otherwise. 2, to like listen to your gut. If something feels unsafe, then trust yourself. But at the same time, sometimes it's important to trust that the people we love are gonna like be there for us. That's so obtuse, and it's just like,
No, that's actually good advice. That's something you never really think about, you know, trust the people around you if they really care about you.
Right. I mean, and it's hard because you don't want to give advice that's going to push somebody into harm's way. But I would say that the world is a bigger, more open place than it ever has been. And that even if you don't have those resources within your own familial structure, that there are often resources online, like the Southern Equality Group is one, or listening to podcasts like this that are, you know, geared towards queer people living in the South. And even if those people are older than you, it lets you see the life that is possible, that you can have a family and happiness and friends and community. It's just all about getting yourself into a place that where you feel safe and you can become, you know? And that high school is short, and that even though it may feel like it's just endless and you're never going to get out of the awful place where you are, like, it's going to end and you're going to get out into the world and you're going to find your people.
It's only 4 years. You can do it. Mm-hmm. Well, J. Robin Brown, it's been so nice to talking to you.
It's been so nice to talk to you too. And I want to tell you that we were out in Arizona visiting family and drove back across the country. And we listened to
your
podcast. Yes, it was great.
I'm so glad to hear that. You know, we're still figuring it out. I'm still learning the podcasting business or hobby, if you will, because I'm a college professor in real life, so I'm still figuring out. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, you guys are doing a great job, and I love just kind of the focus of like queer in the South and what that means. And because you know, like I said, there's a lot of us out there, and sometimes it feels like we're really isolated, but we're there. And podcasts like yours, like, you know, kind of bring us together, which is nice.
Well, thank you so much for saying that. It's been amazing to talk to you, even though it took forever for us to get connected because of my schedule, but it's been amazing to talk to you. So J. Robin Brown is a best-selling author based out of North Carolina. Her new book is called 5 Months or Forever, available now. Everyone should go get it. And everybody should check out her young adult books, No Place to Fall, Georgia Peaches and Other Forbidden Fruit, The Meaning of Birds, and The Key to You and Me. All of those are available, and you should go read all of them. And we'll see you all next time.
Bye.
All right, everyone. That's going to do it for this episode of Southern Queries. You can learn more about our guest at jrobinbrown.com, and J is spelled J-A-Y-E. Remember, if you like the show, we would really appreciate a good review and rating on Apple Podcasts app. It really helps other people find the show. You can also follow us on Spotify, Overcast, and Google Podcasts, and Apple Music. This episode is written and produced by Aubrey, with additional writing and help by me, Corinne. Our intro music was mixed by Allison Holly, and India Bastian is in charge of technical and social media functions. Aubrey Calvin handles most research and administrative functions. Stay safe and have a happy Pride.